are we not polished 18 episodes in on this shit? We're making it up every time.
Roll for host. Generating
59.
That is my first natural one. Ooh,
you got a one, Josh? Yeah.
No, 15. I did.
Oh, you got a one?
That's my...
Okay.
First host ever. Again. Welcome to the Escort Mission podcast. I'm Josh.
It sounds like you're welcoming a podcast to the Escort Mission.
Welcome, podcast, to the Escort Mission.
Welcome, Escort, to the mission.
Session in your car.
Or wherever you are.
So, podcast that will be joining us while listening to this.
Make happy.
Introduce yourself.
Can you tell it's been a while?
I'm Charles. What's up, podcast listeners?
I'm Mike. Hello, people, wherever you are.
Those are people. I'm Josh, again. And welcome. Go to our website, click on our shit, and interact with us, send us some emails so we can do a mailbag.
Tell a friend, buy stuff on Amazon.
We got an email.
Sweet.
No way.
We got an email for later, yes.
All right.
To the yes.
Yep.
All right. Let's open with fucking emails.
No, because I'm not ready. I gotta look it up.
Okay, then Charles, how was your week?
Yeah, go.
Oh, man. So we're back after a week gone because I was working my ass off for 2 weeks straight.
Or so he says.
Or so I say. Oh, my God. I worked a lot. And so, therefore, I have very little to talk about because I was mostly working and not playing games.
Can you not talk about work? Is it not interesting enough to...
I can mention it.
Maybe you can't say a lot about it.
I was working... I work part-time at an advertising agency who was doing an RFP proposal for a large Asian car manufacturer's digital presence redesign.
Whoa.
So talk about this in concept generally. I think it's... The whole RFP process is just hilarious and crazy. Because
it's like Mad Men, right?
Companies get all this free work out of other companies.
It's really astonishing. And I've never worked in it. It was a total eye-opener when I started working there. They really do. They just, like, if your account is big enough, even if it's not really that big, and these are big numbers that we're talking about, but not super huge. And they basically, as you say, they go out to... They do an RFI, which goes out to whatever.
What does that stand for?
Request for information to like 100 agencies. And from there, they pick, or just anybody who wants to can respond, right? From there, they pick like, 10 or 15 that they send the RFP or request for proposal to. And those agencies can then do a shitload of free work. And it's just amazing. I can think of no other agency, or rather no other industry that works this way, that they just like, okay, 10 of the top creative agencies in the country do a bunch of stuff. They literally have assignments. They have multiple assignments. They're like, how would you market this? Or what would you do for this part, or, you know, our social marketing, right? Whatever it may be, they literally just spell out, come up with the campaign that you would run, or come up with, you know, the things that we need to do to make our website better. And then the winning agency can just use any or all of that work if they want to. It's unbelievable. I cannot imagine like a law firm working this way.
So to some extent, I think it might be more prevalent than you imagine. We use a very, very similar process at my software development company in attempt to land like DoD contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Like an RFP will be put out to several huge, government contractors that will each spend maybe weeks, of development hours, like prepping software and proposals, you know, demo software and proposals and stuff to show to the client to say, you know, we should get this contract. Here's our idea. Here's our functioning prototype. Here's, you know, whatever. It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
They'll spend just an absurd amount of money in attempt to get a contract.
Like tens
of
thousands of
dollars. Several
companies
will. Like four to six companies will all compete and do the same thing. Now, at the end, they don't get to use our source code if they don't choose us.
Right.
Unlike the advertising world, I mean, which I think sounds there's, even more baffling.
There's sort of like a gentleman's agreement that you're not supposed to use the word wholesale. So if they'll do, they do what's called comps, which are like conceptual websites with no code behind them, but basically just done in Photoshop. Like, this is how we would design your website, you know, given these parameters. So like
a mock-up, essentially.
A mock-up, but not a wireframe, like a fully realized design for how the site would look. So they literally just paint in Photoshop okay. how the site would look.
So no back-end, no database, no right. JavaScript.
Right, and it's not coded
right.
it's just, right, at all. It's just done in Photoshop by an artist, but it's what they think the site should look like. And so you're not allowed to use that work wholesale, but there's nothing that says that they couldn't, right? You would just get a bad reputation if you did, but any of the kind of more conceptual, like, written down aspects, you know, this is we've done all this research and this is what it says about how you should proceed. Like, you can use any of that. It's kind of nuts.
So it's like they're essentially crowdsourcing their design.
They kind of do, yeah.
Hey, you know, population, you know, give us your best shot.
The best paid, you know, creative talent in the country.
Wow.
It's kind of nuts.
But theoretically, the final cost or, you know, of the work is going to be bloated, you know, the price mm-hmm. to pay for all that, essentially. Because if you guys need to keep your head above water by, you know, doing several of these and not getting all those contracts, and then you finally land one, that one needs to be so big that it paid for all your giveaway work.
Theoretically, you would have to build that in.
In theory, they're paying for the work anyway.
Everybody's fucking themselves.
So they're
is
all
what
fucking
you're saying.
Themselves.
Yeah. It's not a particularly efficient way to do it, in my view. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how else you do it. I think if you don't do something like this, you get into a chicken and egg thing, which is like the other best way to do it is to look at past performance. And here's other brands that we work with and other websites that we've done. And, you know,
like most jobs,
campaigns.
You bring a resume or a portfolio and they look at
portfolio.
It. Yeah. You don't make stuff up on the spot for them right then, you know?
Yeah.
Although some programming jobs, they do require you to like program or write some code like in the interview, mm-hmm. which is sort of like that.
Yeah.
But you're usually not making anything even close to the level of completion. Yeah.
I know architecture works this way too. They do like major architecture, like, you know, we're going to build a new courthouse or something like that, like $100 million contracts. They do a lot of like work up front.
Oh, man. When there was a request for proposal out for the World Trade Center Memorial,
mm-hmm.
and I knew people like working on that. It was such a big call for input for all these different types of memorials. It was like an open public call or something. It wasn't just a handful of contractors.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So anyway, that's crazy. And we worked our ass off. And it was like, I don't know, as few as, you know, five at the beginning up to like 15 or 20 people at this creative agency working, you know, tens of hours a day, just getting, you know, super nuts. It literally cost, you know, I shouldn't really say tens of thousands of dollars. Cost a lot of money to put this thing together.
Was there a point where you guys were like kind of reaching your boiling over point where you're like, dude, I don't know, guys, I don't know if this is gonna happen, or I can't think of anything else, you know, you're just losing it kind of a thing? Or
oh yeah, totally. I mean, we definitely get to the point where everybody's just, you know, just trying to write more, trying to make everything better. There's just like a, you know, different series of deadlines, and there's basically, you know, one designer who is tasked with putting the whole thing, because what the finished deliverable is a book, literally a book, like 150 pages, you know, glossy, spread double truck, exceptionally well designed, like finished product. So you have to deliver a digital copy the day before. It was like Thursday by the close of business, and then Friday you had to drop off physical copies of your deck, your book. So yeah, it was nuts. It was weird. It was an experience. It was fun. All the kind of thought process and thinking about how this company should market themselves, that stuff is really interesting. But writing everything and writing it well and making it all make sense and kind of flow and have a narrative through the whole deck and whatever, that's all. It was challenging. Anyway, so I did actually have time to do some stuff. The things that I want to endorse, music. I watched the U.S. television debut of The Clash, where they sang London Calling.
The band, The Clash.
The band, okay. The Clash. Yeah. In like 83 or something, they sang London Calling and Train in Vain. And those two songs are super different. I did not realize that Train in Vain was actually a Clash song, and that was weird. And London Calling is so, you know, pugilistic, and Train in Vain is like bouncy and cheeky and poppy, you know. That was a pretty disparate and interesting band, so it makes me want to go listen to a lot of stuff. But I recommend people go check out that particular video because it's pretty fun.
Cool.
The Gautier song, Somebody That I Used to Know, Someone That I Used to Know.
Yep.
Somebody, I think.
Gautier himself, that's not his name, it's some other guy. He re-edited all the covers. I linked this to you guys earlier in the week. Edited all the covers that people uploaded to YouTube together to make another different, like, mega edit of that song, which was really cool. I liked it a lot. It's not something I'd seen done before, although it probably has been done. But it was fun to see that song turned into something else, first by people who listened to it, and then by the original author themselves, or artist, and just sort of the evolving creative sphere, you know, remix culture re-embraced by the artists themselves. And it was really fun. It managed to make that song incredibly epic by the end, with like metal guitar shredding and and full symphonies and all that stuff. So
there's actually, I just want to mention real quick, there is a guy who did basically the same thing. He took a bunch of like YouTube recordings that people made of disparate riffs and drum beats and whatever, and put them all together. And he did that like 7 or 8 times and made like an album of YouTube musician song.
Cool.
Which I have linked before, and I have a couple of them as like favorites on YouTube because they're so well done.
Nice.
So that it has been done before, but not by the composer of his own song of all the versions of it. Yeah. So that was a neat twist.
Yeah. It was fun.
And he didn't put out a direct request for this, right?
No.
He just not as far realized, as Jesus Christ,
the song is crazy popular.
There are a ton of covers of this. Everybody wants to do it.
Yeah, it sounds like something that, you know, he and his buddy were just bullshitting around, like, dude, you should fucking remix all the covers of this and, and just re-record the same song with all the... And then somebody went, hey, you should actually really do that. That could be interesting and fun.
Yeah,
there's like thrash metal, solo sax, 30-part choir.
The
like
sax playing
orchestra.
The main melody was nice.
Yeah. A guy playing a tutorial, like his tutorial of how to play the song. People who are actually parodying the song or, you know, doing satire. There's a guy making fun of other cover videos. There's a guy in the video making fun of the Walk Off the Earth video where they're, you know, the five people are playing it on one guitar. And all kinds of different fun stuff. So that was cool. I want to talk about pro gaming. There was Riot Games, who make League of Legends, have announced that they are funding their own pro gaming league. So they're going to basically they're deciding that this is going to be their marketing expenditure. That instead of marketing their game separately, they're just going to put that money into funding both prize pools for the players playing League of Legends and actual player salaries. They're actually going to create a salary pool for like the top 8 teams, 8 League of Legends teams, which are like 5-man teams. They haven't said how much of a salary that's going to be, what that number is, but I thought that was a pretty interesting development that they want to, an interesting way to make that system become a they explicitly said, like, we want to make this a viable career path, we want to make it attractive for professional gamers to come play our game rather than others. And because at the moment, like in StarCraft, it's all built around teams, so the teams have like a coach or a general manager, and the teams themselves have to go out and find sponsorships in order to fund the team, and then they pay player salaries out of those, which I think probably leads to fewer pro teams than could happen this way if you actually have the game company funding it themselves.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like it could be brilliant. We'll see how it goes.
We will.
Yeah.
Us into the future.
OnLive got sold. that kind of exploded today.
Yeah.
I've been hearing lots of, you know, stories with rumors that are half true and...
Like, they're firing everybody in the company. Oh, they're firing half the number of people.
All the rumors went crazy yesterday.
And it's being sold to, like, one dude or something.
But today it seemed relatively confirmed that a little under half the company got fired and walked out yesterday. A little over half. They have a little under half left.
Yeah.
And it got sold to a private entity that isn't announced yet, or public.
Right. Yeah, so that's too bad, because I don't want there to only be one of those companies. I'm all about having at least two of them. What's the other one?
Gaikai.
Yes, who were bought by Sony. So I was happy that at least OnLive was there as an independent, you know. But we'll see. Maybe they'll stay open. They're kind of making noises like they will. I really want that tech to work.
Yeah, they've had this service, that's existed for a couple of years now, maybe, and it probably didn't take off fast enough for their original business plan. Mm-hmm. And it reached a crisis point where they needed new money to continue existing, and they had to restructure. It would have been cool if like Sony bought them or Microsoft bought them or something like that, integrated them into their next product or something, but as a third party, they just weren't making profit enough yet. But it's kind of neat that as a third party, they could get their service on all these different consoles, on the Ouya or on PC.
Yeah, they said they're still developing for that thing.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Hmm. Yeah. And then the last thing that I wanted to talk about, we had a conversation over IM on this today, was the sort of the gacha culture. We were talking about it in relation to a number of different areas of life, politics, given the current election season, in presidential politics, in terms of gaming culture. The couple recent examples that have flared up in gaming, there was the girlfriend skill tree comment, which was from the developers of Borderlands. I'll just read that quote. It was John Hemingway, lead designer of Borderlands 2. Said, "I want to make, for lack of a better term, the girlfriend skill tree. This is, I love Borderlands and I want to share it with someone, but they suck at first-person shooters. Can we make a skill tree that actually allows them to understand the game and to play the game? That's what our attempt at the Best Friends Forever skill tree is." Recently, Adam Carolla made the comment that he thought men were funnier than women, which blew up into a huge thing, but the entire quote is... if it's one of those things where, again, it's a gotcha kind of semi out of context. The whole quote was more, he name checks like six women who he thinks are super funny in that quote, and the whole quote is more about what women are like, as a whole, and right in terms of statistical averages and the way that women tend to be more empathic, and that part of being funny is being unempathic. And so, there's the third example that came up that I could think of was Todd Akin, like yesterday, I believe. This is a Republican senatorial candidate. Is he?
No, he's representative running? From Missouri.
Okay, so he's running for re-election, but
yeah,
okay. He made a comment about. Geez, I actually don't have that one. Can you paraphrase that? I didn't copy that one down.
Yes, Josh, talk about rape for us, is what Charles is asking you.
I don't know if I know the exact quote well enough, but the two-word quote that got headlines,
right, that
was, quote, legitimate rape.
Right.
And even in the context of what he was talking about, it wasn't that much better. But, the definition of legitimate in that phrase,
was at issue.
Was at issue. And he claimed he misspoke. He probably meant to say, or not meant to say, I can't say that for sure. But he said that he misspoke. And he probably would have rather that he said actual.
Right.
Or something like that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Instead of... legitimized or lawful or something like that.
But the whole quote was in the context of, you know, him having some sort of insight medically about, or having heard that, you know, women's bodies have defense mechanisms so as not to get pregnant in cases of rape, which is, you know, clearly this is like has very little bearing in fact, but it did sort of bring up those three instances, kind of brought to mind the kind of issues, the problems with the sort of gotcha culture of journalism, and how we've discussed this not maybe directly but a number of other times about, you know, the need for nuance, the problems with these types of quotes. You know, it's kind of fun to get really up in arms, and I got totally up in arms about the Todd Akin thing. Todd Akin thing this morning. Todd's dude. fucking rapists,
bro.
And I still feel up in arms because what he said was completely reprehensible. But I was aware when saying it that I was reading in, at least to some extent, to what he was, you know, I was inferring something about his viewpoints that was not explicitly mentioned in the quote. And I at least have that defense. I'm pretty sure I'm right in my assumptions, but I can't be sure. So I don't know. What is it just impossible to do this given the way blogs work and the cable news networks work, or what's the deal?
I think whenever you have a nuanced discussion of something controversial, there is always going to be the potential for someone to summarize your position, you know, unfavorably, mm-hmm. and then put that in a headline. And as long as media exists, I think it's going to be possible to do that. I mean, we've talked about it here. We couch anything we say that's controversial and, you know, as carefully as possible. But, you know, luckily we're not on the world's, you know, front and center. We're not, you know, if we were, we'd have to be a lot more careful and get more PR training.
We're,
you
know, not trusted and idolized authorities on the matter.
We've talked about some of our favorite developers who've, you know, said controversial things, Phil Fish and Jonathan Blow and guys, whoever the guys were that talked about Japanese developers. Mm-hmm. And
that was,
you know,
yeah, Phil Fish.
Yeah, that was Phil Fish. You know, whenever you
Fish and Blow and Todd,
you know, atheists get it a lot too. Sam Harris, mm-hmm. is really outspoken, but takes flack constantly, even though he makes very logical and nuanced points. You know, yeah, and you know, a lot of these folks won't go into like public debates,
right?
Because a debate by its nature, like,
legitimizes
won't necessarily be able to be a nuanced discussion. You know, mm-hmm. a public debate can play on, you know, who has the best oratorial skills and who can like get the best applause line. Mm-hmm. Even in a live setting,
yeah,
you know, it's kind of like who can say the best applause line, not who can make the most scientifically sound argument, mm-hmm. without using fallacies and stuff. Yeah. You know, I think it's just a problem in human interaction.
Yeah.
Abortions for some, small American flags for everyone. TLDR to what Josh just said, some people just want to watch the world burn. But
well, Mr. Chadwick.
it's like one of those things where
you want a nuanced discussion.
It's so much easier to just, say something interesting that gets everybody's attention rather than actually slog through the multi-textured veneer of every real topic, you know.
It's
most people don't want to do that.
Yeah,
it's not really fun, and also that there was,
but
that,
it is fun. It's so more fun.
Well, okay. I was just gonna say that there was an article we brought up many weeks ago, I think, just briefly, where it was like there was a study done where people argue not to actually think about the issue, right, just to prove themselves right. Like, uh-huh. they just want to win.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is that too many people just want to win. They don't actually want to listen to an opposing viewpoint and think about anything. You know, look at the internet. I mean, the internet is the personification of that attitude.
Yeah.
You know, people just want to go in and say their awesome comment and get a bunch of upvotes and get out.
Yeah.
You're so wrong, Mike, even though I have no idea what you just said because I wasn't listening.
Yeah, it's a bummer because...
Downvote.
At least in two... Like, the Todd Akin thing, I'm actually happy that he said it because I think it at least allows us to have an interesting conversation about...
I'm a little bit irritated because... It gave a great opportunity for, like, every other prominent Republican to, like, rebuke him.
Right.
And look like they're on the side of women's rights.
Right. That was the Onion headline.
Right?
Is like, yeah. Republican Party rebukes Todd Akin and falls back on their spotless 50-year record of women's rights.
150
years. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Mitt Romney, you know, had to, the first headline I heard about the whole thing was this morning, Mitt Romney saying, you know, his... This guy Akin's comments were reprehensible.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, really?
Yeah.
Like,
because some of your positions you are pretty fucking reprehensible.
Yeah. But he got an opportunity to say, Romney, to say he doesn't oppose abortion in cases of rape, I guess.
Right.
Which
awesome.
Well, legitimate rape.
Right. Legitimate.
None of this bullshit half rape.
Yeah.
Well, I was kind of into it.
I know the phrase is so bad.
Yeah.
It's really terrible. Yeah, and the Carolla's comments on humor between men and women. He's actually somebody who's done a lot of thinking about comedy. And
all I heard about that until you told me that the more nuanced discussion of it was my takeaway was he's a dick.
Right, because that's what you learn, and you're contextualizing it in what you know about him, which is basically most people know, like, oh, he was the host of The Man Show.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. He seems like a bro. He
and
seems
the
like
Man
he would
Show,
have that attitude.
Yeah. Unless you've watched a lot of it, which I actually haven't, but, you know, the few episodes that I've watched, he and Jimmy Kimmel are always the butt of the joke, right? They're always the ones who get shit on in the end. It's always making fun of them, and women often come out pretty well. It makes at least as much fun of men and their own men's foibles and problems as it does of women. It definitely has a jocular quality and girls jumping on trampolines, but that idea in itself is like kind of an over-the-top ridiculousness, you know? So anyway, he's done a lot of thinking about comedy. I think that's, you know, there's something a little bit insightful about the way women are funny and the way men are funny. And he said there, you know, in the whole quote, he literally name checks like five or six women, Tina Fey and Lisa Lampanelli and several others who he thinks are very funny. But the point he was making, I think, is that men in general are funnier than women because male culture is more about taking the piss out of people and women, you know, female culture is more empathic. So anyway, that's an interesting conversation that you can have. The girlfriend skill tree thing is very interesting for people who are into gaming. The idea of...
Yeah, if it wasn't called the girlfriend
skill
tree.
If it wasn't called the girlfriend skill tree.
If he just called it granular difficulty,
that
would have got all the nerds up, you know.
But the whole quote, he literally says, for lack of a better term, right? He's aware that the term is not a good one, and he tries to make that clear in the quote. Like, this is an easy shorthand. And then it goes into the whole idea of... Most girlfriends don't play video games, right? Most, it is very common. It's like, does it make sense to try to ignore reality, or is it even worse to do so and not acknowledge that many girlfriends aren't into their boyfriend's hobby of video gaming? You know, is it even that sexist?
It's kind of a catch-22 occasionally. Like, it's you can't call attention to the problem without almost becoming a defender of the problem, or perpetrating it, or perpetrating? No.
Yeah,
perpetrating it. Yeah. So, as soon as you say rape or girlfriend or something controversial or racism, all of a sudden you have to be very careful what the next few words out of your mouth are to make sure that you don't become a part of that issue that you just brought to the attention.
Right.
Because that's what they're going to hold on to, you know?
Well, one of my favorites...
rape is bad.
I did not too long ago, was in conversation...
Illegitimate rape is even worse. Sorry.
In a conversation recently with an acquaintance who was a teacher, I'd really wanted to, bring up the topic, but I knew I had to be careful. And I wanted to bring up the topic of performance-based pay.
Mm-hmm.
And it is impossible, I submit, it is impossible to bring up the concept of performance-based pay with an educator without them immediately leaping to the conclusion that...
You're for it.
That is directly tied to standardized tests.
Mm-hmm.
And the performance of students on standardized tests, therefore evaluating the performance of the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And that you know, leap of logic, that connection of the performance of students on standardized tests with the performance of a teacher, and therefore their pay, right, is a connection that I think the teachers' unions have, like, really effectively made in the minds of the debate. But maybe it's just, like, maybe it's the news media. Maybe it's the people for the standardized test. You know, maybe the whole discussion has correlated those so directly, and yet they don't have to be correlated. You know, the performance of a teacher doesn't have to be based on at all on any tests given to the students. But you can't bring up that discussion without having all these, you know, preconceived notions of the discussion.
Right. Or it'd be like bringing up, you know, like, I'm really for this government program, and I think it's good, and we should have it, and we shouldn't privatize it, and now you are immediately a socialist, and, you know, or something like that.
Right.
You know, like, you can't be for a part of something without being a part of it whole hog or something. And then you have to justify that you're not a socialist all of a sudden when that's not even what you brought up, you know? But they make the leap of logic.
Are you socialist, Mike?
I am.
Are you saying you're socialist?
I am. That's what I'm saying.
So this is not something that I was planning on bringing up, but I will link an incredibly great article about the Finnish education system that I linked to both of you.
As opposed to the Startish.
It was super interesting. I already sent it to a bunch of people I know.
Yeah. So just in terms of accountability, they redesigned their entire education system around the concept of equity. So I won't go into it, but there just is, like, this incredibly great quote, even out of the context of education, that is, like, my new mantra.
Rape is bad.
Rape is way bad. Accountability is something that is left when responsibility has been subtracted. I fucking love that quote. It's so great. And the idea of they basically have no standardized testing, and B, no performance-based pay. They don't have either one, right? Their whole school system, they basically made all the... They built sort of equality into the system. They built accountability into the system, or responsibility into the system, by making the position of teacher one of the most highly prized and difficult to achieve positions in the country. It's a hard job to get, and it pays really well, and so people really want it and want to do a good job. And
that's awesome.
They just basically approached, you know, okay, now I'm kind of getting into the weeds. They, you know, both systems, right, sort of a more privatized, you know, a system which includes private schools like ours, and a system which is completely based around equality that explicitly does not allow private schools, can both produce excellence, but the equality-oriented one produces excellence sort of as a byproduct of the equality rather than as the direct goal of, you know, profit-driven education. It's just a fascinating analysis of the subject. So that was cool. Last thing that we all did is we all watched the movie Drive.
We did.
Yes.
Right? Do we want to talk about this?
Sure.
Yeah.
How was Drive?
My take on Drive was that the cinematography is awesome.
Fuck yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The music is actually really good.
It's pretty good.
God, this is going to be short, isn't it?
Yeah, we're all going to agree on everything.
The direction is real good, and the only fault that you can give it, there's a couple, like, car guy, you know, you can poke some holes in some of the dialogue. Like, you know, one of the ones that stood out is, you know, he's trying to start a race team, and he says, this, you know, we got this NASCAR car still got some tread on the tires.
And oh my god, the tire comment.
So fucking ridiculous. Like, a set of tires for a NASCAR car last like less than a quarter of the race, right? And there's never any tread on it. They're slicks. So there's a couple like car guy holes you can poke in it, but just the plot doesn't necessarily hang together. But that said, I thought it was really good. It's a cool, very, very stylish movie. Kind of ultra-violent, like Scarface.
Yeah, the descent into ultra-violence was a bit much. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it was appropriately shocking, I guess. You know, when it happened, you're like, whoa, that,
yeah, I
holy
didn't
crap.
Expect it, and I didn't want to say anything because I thought that was kind of a spoiler.
Okay, spoiler. I don't know. We were going to talk about the movie. How could we not talk about
the movie? No, continue. I'm not.
Yeah, the violence was maybe a bit much, and just the way the plot just kind of literally devolved into just someone killing someone, killing someone, killing someone, mm-hmm. kind of just like, you know. So I think I'd say the first like 80% of the movie was pretty sweet, and then it just kind of ended.
Right. And it did
like,
just kind of end.
Like, okay. I don't know. I think they could have made that way more narratively interesting, but I guess that wasn't really the point the whole time. It was kind of, I think someone else referred to it in a review as like a poem.
A tone poem. I was literally going to say it's a tone poem.
So
it's like a paean to, you know, present day Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it actually reminded me a lot of the movie Collateral. Do you ever see that with no. Jamie Foxx and Tom Cruise?
Mm-hmm.
Both, I think that's a David Lynch movie or David Fincher. It's a David
Fincher,
somebody.
Maybe. Probably not weird enough for Lynch.
They're both sort of like love letters to L.A. And kind of really, really grounded in L.A. and actually both in car culture. But yeah, it's like a tone poem. It's like sensory almost.
Yeah, it comes and it does its thing and it goes. And you're like, okay, that was pretty cool what just happened.
You guys said everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't need to say anything.
Cool. All right.
Agree.
Go watch Drive.
All right.
It's good. Mike, how was your week?
All right. It was good. I just wanted to throw out real quick, you know, we also all experienced the Olympics. I know it ended a while ago, but...
Olympics.
I thought the closing ceremonies were pretty cool. Blah, blah, NBC cut The Who and Muse. That was bullshit. But I actually didn't even get to that part of the cast because it was like hours long and I went to bed. But
I did not watch the closing ceremonies at all.
But
that Facebook meme thing that you sent out today was
The Olympics.
All of Olympics in meme form recap.
Avocado, 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 avocado.
The Olympics as internet meme was amusing. I mean... I don't. That's a good question, though. I mean, does that really add to your enjoyment of the Olympics, or does that detract from like its gravitas? That it's literally just a place for stupid shit on the internet to originate.
No, it doesn't detract from it at all for me. Everything should be able to be satirized.
So are you saying that you wish that existed 20 years ago and it would have made like
it did?
Like on the internet in that form. No.
The internet should always have existed? I don't know what you're asking.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Are you pissed that the internet has only existed for as long as
it has? I think people probably satirized it, like, you know, in different media and, you know, maybe in individual opinion columns in newspapers or something.
Right. This is just faster and more shorthand.
Yeah. If only we had more memes to get through the Great Depression.
Right. Yeah. As opposed to just a political
cartoon.
If your
farm turns into a dust bowl, you're going to have a bad time.
Okay, so I want to start off my segment with mail. Hit it, Charles.
Mailbag, mailbag, we're going to open the mailbag.
Mail.
Oh, so, nice. So we got an email last Tuesday from a John Cox. You may or may not know him.
Spelled J-A-W-N.
Yes.
Not really.
And Cox is C-O-C-K-S.
Not really.
Okay, so he writes, his subject is, this might be in your...
That's so fucking immature.
You expected any less? Come on.
Oh, God, I'm 12.
Yes, you spell Cox, P-E-N-I-S. So he said, this might be in your wheelhouse.
E-S.
Bumped into it on Reddit. You guys have probably seen it already, but it's a pretty awesome video of the Just Cause 2 multiplayer server.
Fucking A.
And then he gives a link to the video that... Did you guys watch?
Yeah, I tried to convince like you guys to play it.
I watched it. It was chaotic. I don't think it was nearly as exciting as if we actually had played it.
I'm so stoked for Just Cause 3 that has not been announced, mm-hmm. and it better be fucking 4-player multiplayer co-op.
Or Just Cause 2 Episode 1.
Oh my god.
That would be good too.
I'm so excited, but I'll get to that more
Break
later.
Break the Valve
actually.
Curse. Also, crazy shit going on in real life. The Mars rover, Curiosity. I'm not sure that I've been this excited about space-related goings on in a while.
Yeah, why are you so excited about space?
I don't know. Like, we've put shit on Mars before, so it's not like...
Do you know why? It's because Neil deGrasse Tyson is so awesome.
He totally is.
That's true.
Also, the process for landing...
I was going to say,
it's the awesomest process ever. It's like such a Rube Goldberg device.
It's amazing.
Are you fucking kidding me? That was somehow the best way to land?
Yes. Yeah, that was totally... it makes the previous method by which they dropped Curiosity.
They dropped it and it bounced.
They literally like inflated a thing and just like dropped it and hoped, you know,
and to God.
They just inflated some balloons and it bounced and it rolled.
It's gonna roll for a while. We hope it doesn't roll off a cliff.
We hope it's okay when it lands. Like,
hope it doesn't punch or
chuck it at the planet.
Which one was that called?
Opportunity.
Spirit and Opportunity.
Yeah, it was both of them.
So, yeah, there's been tons of pictures of Mars. I don't know. For some reason, when I look at these pictures of Mars, they are incredibly boring. Like, it looks like, you know, Southern California desert with
some hills. It looks like Death Valley.
It looks like Death Valley, but... Yeah.
But they're 2 megapixels.
But they're on motherfucking Mars, people. That is another planet. They're beaming images like, you know, I don't know how many light years away or millions of miles, whatever. It just... I don't know. I look at it and they have...
I don't think it's any significant number of light years.
They've got 360-degree panoramas. It has a fucking laser beam that it's pew-pewing at rocks now.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just...
It is so mind-blowing that we're capable of that.
It's mind-blowing when you actually stop and try to think about it. If you just look at the picture, like, it looks like Death Valley. That's cool. Whatever. It's Mars. We've done it before. But if you actually think, no, dude, that's fucking Mars. You will most likely never go there in your lifetime.
Most likely, yeah.
But that shit is happening.
Yeah, it's reachable.
Anyway.
It is melting rocks with lasers.
It's fucking melting rocks with lasers. Yes.
The Onion article on the moon landing.
And JPL.
For science.
The Onion article on the moon landing is, along those lines.
Oh, yes.
It's like, holy fucking shit, man lands on fucking moon.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, Neil Armstrong quoted as saying, like, one small step for man, holy living fuck. I'm about to step on the fucking moon. It's awesome. It's just that complete incredulity. And
I think
it really has captured the popular... imagination.
Well, obviously, they have a Twitter account for Curiosity, which is pretty kind of tongue in cheek. I think there's even a sarcastic Curiosity Twitter that's even funnier or something. Uh-huh. Anyway,
I think it literally said like, "Hello Mars, I am in you" when it landed or something. Yeah.
Like I think, you know, like we're besotted with so much random cool shit on the internet every day that I definitely feel overwhelmed by it sometimes, to where it the individual value of each item drops significantly just because there's so much of it. But when I see something like this that isn't just like a cool design or a cool website or a new game or a movie, you know, this is actually like crazy engineering feat. It's a planet that's far away and it's beaming back pictures like, you know,
it's like advancing the capabilities of humanity as a species.
Like, I assume it's how people might have felt in 1969 when we landed on the moon and you saw shit on TV about it.
Or when the Wright brothers flew or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's cool. Beck has a new album coming out. It's not music. It is
music.
It is musical instructions. I.e. sheet music. So that's kind of an interesting idea.
Not till like December, though.
Not till December. Josh is very disappointed because he wants to play that shit immediately. There was a screenshot. You could probably play the first 4 bars of it or something.
It looked kind of low res. I need to find a higher res one, maybe. Yeah.
Can't tell if it's an eighth or a quarter note. Also, I just saw this today. On Saturday in Savonlinna, speaking of Finland, Savonlinna, Finland, was held the World Mobile Phone Throwing Championship.
What?
Okay, so there's two different like rounds of this, or that broken up into men, women, and junior. The first one is just exactly what you think. They have like a bunch of junk cell phones, and people throw them as far as they can. They get two throws. They choose the longest one. The other one is freestyle, where you literally have to make like the most creative throw you can possibly think of. And that shit just happened in Finland over the weekend. You're right. We need to move to Finland.
It's interesting.
Good shit is happening over there.
Because Finland is Nokia, right? Like the whole country is about cell phones.
That wasn't Sweden?
No.
Okay.
Finland is, or right. Ericsson? I don't know. One of them is Ericsson, one of them is Nokia.
Pretty good on telecommunications.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Anyway, I thought that was awesome.
That's funny.
Okay. Some music notes. I continued my listening to stuff that Josh gave me, TM, graphic on the screen, Daily Show style.
Right.
I listened to Lunas, 100 EP, which I have to give some props because that's kind of funny. My review is meh. Not a big fan of that. I don't think you're surprised. It was kind of tonight-ish. So... I don't know. I'm just going to say I don't really dig that, so move on. So I didn't even finish the other one, Stacker Upper.
Sure.
I listened to a song and then moved on.
All right.
Rusty, Glass Swords.
Yeah.
I dig that shit. Pretty dope.
Really?
I do.
I thought you were going to say it was super cheesy club shit.
Well, I won't say that it's not super cheesy club shit,
right.
But I like it way better
than
Lunas.
That's what I'm saying. It's super cheesy club shit. That's awesome.
Right, and Lunas is not. I don't know. Lunas is shit, and Rusty's actually pretty good. So Glass Swords, that's good. It's very Hudson Mohawk-esque. I think it's just like...
But it's cheesier. It has more dubstep drops. It has more predictable, like...
It's got more melody. It's got more, like, pads. It's not just like one repeated, kind of crappy three-note melody over, like, doom, doom, doom. With like a shitty 808 drums.
It's
I don't
got
know.
More warp is what it has.
Yeah, and by that it's good is what you're saying. It's good.
Does it have swag? That's all I need to know.
It might have slightly more swag.
Okay.
It's moderately swaggish.
That's so weird that swag became... Every time somebody says swag, I just think of
stuff
the cheesy shit that you get at... You know, like an IT conference.
Yeah, the
like
shit a you pen throw away later.
And a blinky ball and that shit.
I can't believe you do.
That's all
that's
I think
what
of
I think of.
When people say
really?
Swag. Like, I got
that's
swag. I'm
that's
like,
the first time I ever heard that
you got
word.
Weird pens?
Was like bullshit you get at a convention.
I think of swagger, and I always thought of that stuff as swag. Like, I literally spelled it in my head S-C-H, even though it's technically an acronym, S-W-A-G. I forget what it stands
stuff
for.
We stuff all
we all
get.
Yeah. There you go. So I think of swagger, but now I think of like Old Spice commercials and stuff.
Do they mention swag? I haven't seen those.
I think there's an ad campaign, that says swag
that.
Specifically. Yeah. It's like
that's cool.
Maybe it's Axe for men or something like that.
That sounds. I think you might be right.
Explicitly says like swag, purchase it in our product, basically
bottled swag.
Right.
For a musical project that I'm working on, I've been listening to soundtracks. So I got the Firefly, StarCraft, Bastion, and Machinarium soundtracks on repeat. Those are all good.
Yeah.
I also, as a musician that I think
Firefly and StarCraft must be really similar. Thinking about them, those are very similar, like space western kind of
motif wise. Yes, yeah. In terms of like the actual instrumentation, pretty different. Like the Terrans, it's very close to the Terran themes.
Yeah,
they have a lot of like, you know, like
slide western guitar. Yeah,
but it's also way more rocking. And Firefly is definitely more like orchestral, you know, movie film music. Bastion also falls along the same line, except it's more groovy, you know, it's like you could dance to it more easily. And then Machinarium is just kind of kind of ambient electronica stuff, which is really good. A friend of mine, or well, he's not really a friend of mine, but a guy I know online that I think I met through Reddit a while ago, his name's Peter Sobot. I'm not really exactly sure how you pronounce the last name. He just put out an album like yesterday called On Air that I really like. He also does the Rock Band thing sometimes on another album called The Idea. He did a lot of Rock Band stuff. He plays like all the instruments himself and just sequences together. And he's actually really good at all of the instruments,
cool.
Including the drums, which is something that most bedroom musicians are not, don't have access to, but he actually has like a drum set in a studio that he can use. Mm-hmm. This new one is all electronica stuff, but it's very interesting. I recommend it. Also, one note about an album before, the Squarepusher album I listened to again, Ufabulum, and for some reason, this one song stuck in my mind when I listened to it. It's called Red in Blue, and it's pretty different from the rest of the album.
Do you remember what track number it is?
I don't know. Okay. But it's pretty easy to remember because it's literally just like one instrument, and it's almost like a 16-bit, maybe 8-bit instrument, and it reminds me of like a bad guy headquarters slash 80s action sneak theme that just doesn't sound like his normal like crazy, fast, complex, like, you know, jungle music. I don't know.
Yeah, I remember some of those songs sounding a bit like a movie score.
It was particularly well done, despite being lo-fi.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just want a special shout-out for that. I really like that one. Okay, games. I played a few games. Beat two games. I beat 10 million. I talked about that last 2 weeks ago. And I also beat the second episode of the Penny Arcade series. Man, some of the best writing in an RPG. I mean, I know, Josh, you played it. You weren't a huge fan of the gameplay. I still think the gameplay is better than you think it is, but I also admit that it's not like the best game mechanic-wise that I've ever played. But the writing is so good. I love every description and line of dialogue in that game. I can't think of the last game I played that I really just wanted to fucking read
like it was
the words.
Book. Yeah.
Like, it's like reading a Tycho news post, like, through an entire game.
Yeah, my love for him has increased over time. So, you know, if I played it now, maybe I'd like it even more. But I think I literally got stuck in that game.
Really?
Yeah, I think I literally got to the point where it's like, I'm supposed to go here. I can't get through. I need to get this thing. I don't know where to get the thing. Like, I looked, and then I circled the fucking map, like, all known explored areas.
Uh-huh.
I circled, like, twice, fighting random enemy encounters like the whole fucking way or something. Doesn't it have random enemy encounters?
It doesn't. No, you can see them on the screen and you can, I mean, you can't avoid them, but you choose to fight them like as you move. They don't just appear out of nowhere.
I don't know. There just seemed to be too many fights when I did this screen circling trying to find out where to go.
That's so weird because I feel like it has probably the least amount of fights and each fight is much more meaningful than your typical like random encounter RPG. Because mainly because it's all, you have to pay attention. When the dudes attack you, there's a small window that you can press the space bar and block, and you either miss the block and get full damage, you get a partial block and it lowers the damage, you block and it almost lowers it all, or you get it perfectly timed and you actually do a counterattack. So every time an enemy fights, you don't really know, like, you know, it's skill-based rather than just, like, hitting fight, fight, fight. And you actually have to use the items, and the bosses are actually hard. At least in the first one, the end boss was incredibly hard. And I'm not even playing on the hard difficulty. Like, even normal difficulty was fun.
I liked that mechanic in Super Mario RPG 10 years ago, but I was just, you know.
Okay.
Saucer of milk, table one.
take that, Penny Arcade game makers. So anyway, the third one is out on like Steam.
Like my timely Austin Powers reference.
The third episode, which is actually an overhead like 16-bit like Final Fantasy graphical thing. I'm actually going to be a super pretentious douche.
It's like $3.
Wait until it comes out on OSX.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Because I played the first one on OSX, I'm gonna wait. I want to play it all on the same shit. Because I just said I'm going to be a pretentious douche about it.
Why does that matter?
Because there's so many other games to play. I don't need to play it right now. I can wait.
Is it even announced that it's getting ported?
Yeah, it's coming. It's actually coming to iOS and Android, too.
Oh, well, if it's coming shortly anyway, then.
Well, I don't know how shortly, but yeah. Two games I just started playing. One for iOS. It's called Gasketball. And it came to my attention because of Ben Kuchara on the Penny Arcade Report. He did a story about the makers of it and how they basically like made a great game, but put it out for free and then made the unlock mechanism an in-app purchase and initially hit it too well in the game. And so they had like a 0.67% like buy-in to that. And they essentially are now homeless because of it.
Wow.
Even though they sold hundreds of thousands of copies, like, you know, almost no one bought it.
Well, they got that many people to install it.
Right. When I bought it, though the unlock mechanism was literally on the front page. So obviously they've changed it in response to that. And I think if they would have done that initially, you know, they would have got tons of soul. Because this game is fucking sweet as hell. It's basically a horse, like the basketball game, except on iOS. And you start it really easy where you have the little ball on the screen and you drag it with your finger, you know, in an arc to try to get into the basket, and it gets, and they add barriers, and they say, okay, now you have to bounce it off the floor and into the basket. Now you have to bounce it off the floor and then this barrier, and then through this portal, nothing but net. You know, it kind of reminds me of those old Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, you know, McDonald's commercials.
So it's that super old crappy paper toss into the trash can game, except done really well. And asynchronous multiplayer.
It actually has synchronous multiplayer because there's a one-on-one thing, but it also has asynchronous, yes, where you set up a shot and have someone else do it.
Well done.
Yeah, and it's, you know, graphics kind of remind me a little of Scribble Knots-ish, except not as cartoony, like more straight edges and stuff. But
is this for mobile?
This is for iOS, yes. It's $1.99. I play it on my iPad, and yeah, it was like instant purchase, 5 seconds. Like, oh my God, this is like my new jam.
Buy it through our link.
Huh?
Buy it through our link.
Yes. I also started playing Prey, old FPS.
Jesus Christ.
Because it just came out for like $2 on the
Steam.
The Mac store. Nope. I bought it on the Mac.
Huh.
Yes, I use a Mac, and I am swayed when games come out on the Mac store because it means I don't have to go into boot camp just to fucking play the game. I will buy it.
But you have Steam on iOS. Or OS X.
I do, but I don't think the sale was on Steam. I think it was specifically through the App Store. So I started playing Prey. I actually played the demo of that long time ago. Have you guys played this game?
Why are you playing Prey?
The only thing I know about Prey is
because it was cheap.
It's supposed to be the one that has the best like AI, the best enemy AI. Or at the time it came out, that was his claim to fame, like really excellent enemy AI.
Really, even after, because it came out after Half-Life, I think, and that was like.
That's what I know about it. That's what it was famous for.
I'm not super far into it, but so far the AI is nothing to speak of. So I'm not sure why that it's known for that. But I did want to play it because it was cheap, and I haven't played an FPS in a while, and it was on the Mac.
Oh wait,
so I chose it.
Am I thinking about Fear?
I don't know.
What's Prey?
Prey is you are a Native American dude, and you start out in a bar, and you get attacked by aliens and transport
to your ship. This is not the same game at all. I'm thinking about a game called Fear. Okay. Prey is the game that we were all super hyped on, Prey 2,
right.
Which looked dope. And okay, so sorry, forget what I said. That was talking about Fear. Anyway.
So Prey 2, yes, that's supposed to be dope, yes, but it's not out yet or something. Mm-hmm. But the original is $2 on the Mac App Store. Haven't played an FPS in a while. I thought I'd try out. It runs great at like full res on my Mac, which is always kind of surprising.
Is it good?
It's a good FPS. If you want to play an FPS, yeah, it's pretty good so far. But I'm only like an hour in, so it's hard to say if it's going to be like an all-time favorite or something. But
yeah, Prey 2, we are super stoked over. So. Yeah.
I also wanted to mention, speaking of Steam, Hero Academy is now on Steam. So people who don't have iOS devices can play it, and you can play against people on iOS devices. So I've been playing Hero Academy for a while, and I'd love to play Josh, but he doesn't have an iPhone. But now if you wanted to, you could play it on Steam, and we could actually have like an asynchronous game going on there.
Yeah, that sounds a little weird, though. I mean, it's a game you launch, and you do like one turn or a couple turns on a couple games, and then you close. So, I mean, if the Steam app runs, like, boots up directly to the fucking make your move screen immediately, and it's really cheap, then maybe. But I'd have to, like, I don't know. It's so weird multitasking for a game like that on a computer compared to a phone. I could try it and see how it goes.
I agree it's a little weird. Another thing that's weird about it is that they charge a lot more for each additional team. I think on iOS, you start out with two teams, and there are two additional teams now, and I think they're only 99 cents each on iOS, but on Steam, they're $4.99 each.
Yeah, it's like $5 for the game to start.
And it's $5 for the game, whereas the original game, I think, was free,
or 99 cents. Is there any justification that? Was it higher res graphics, and they needed to redo them or something?
I mean, it could be higher res graphics, but still, I mean, I don't know. This game is all gameplay, really. I mean, you're not buying it for the graphics.
I mean, there were Team Fortress 2 exclusive characters in the Steam version, but I don't know
except
any other
except they're not exclusive because I have them on the iOS version.
Oh, there you go.
So I don't understand their pricing scheme, but it's such a good game that I say you should try it anyway.
It's weird.
Also played Sound Shapes on the PSP. Josh brought that over. That's a great game.
Shit's
that's
sweet.
Right. Should definitely get that. One more mention, and then I'm done. Catherine. This is a game on Xbox 360. Came out last year. Done by Atlas.
And PS3.
And PS3. Sorry, I played it on Xbox 360. Well, okay. The interesting part is that I played it, I'm doing air quotes, by watching a Let's Play.
Yeah, you didn't play it.
Of it. So I didn't actually play it with a controller. If you don't know what Let's Play is...
at all, really.
Josh, it's very important to Josh to make this delineation.
It is a there's a different delineation.
No, and well, that's why I'm bringing it up. Okay, bringing it up. I'm getting there. I was going to say, if you don't know what Let's Play is, what it is essentially, if you go to lparchive.org, that's sort of the official collection of people who play video games and record themselves and put it on places like YouTube. They often do commentary, sometimes written on the screen, sometimes they talk, sometimes there's multiple people who play a game together. I don't remember the first one I ever saw or how long ago I saw it, but I've watched several of them now, and think of it sort of like watching a speed run of a game, except they're not playing it to do it the best way they can. They're playing it to just enjoy it. And often they do blind runs where they've never played this game before and they're like, let's play Catherine. And they start playing it and they tape it and you watch them. Now, maybe you're thinking this sounds like the stupidest thing ever, but I will say that there are some games that interest me, but not enough to actually put however much time I might take to play them into it, or it's a game that I don't have access to, or it's a game that is $60 and I don't necessarily want to pay that, or, you know, I'm only semi-interested in it. Or you could skip around. You don't have to watch the whole Let's Play. Or the commentator playing the game is really funny or really informative, or the way they play it is very interesting. You know, it's like going over to a buddy's house and watching them play a game, and, you know, it's a different experience. Maybe not everybody's into that experience, but I find it interesting, and it's like watching a movie only if someone play a game. And, you know, we like watching movies. We like watching TV. You know, passive entertainment is not something that we don't enjoy. So anyway, I watched this guy. His username is Gary_Khan, Geri_Khan, like the Star Trek guy. I think he was Scottish.
Or, you know, Genghis.
Right. So he played through the entirety of Catherine. I think it was about 31 parts, each of anywhere between 10 to 20 minutes. So it took me, you know, a good 5 hours to get through the whole game just watching these parts. The game, it's sort of like a dating sim slash puzzler. So there's a storyline. You play a guy. You have a girlfriend. She starts mentioning marriage. But you're sort of like, I think you're like early 30s. You're still kind of like not sure what you want
to
do with your life.
Close to home.
Right. You're not sure what you want to do with your life. You're still, your main activity besides going to work is going to a bar with your buddies and drinking and talking about bullshit. So, you know, your girlfriend of several years bringing up marriage and saying, you know, I really, you know, we should meet my parents, you know, and he starts kind of like getting stressed. He's freaking out about this.
In terms of aesthetic, this is an anime, right?
Yeah. It is anime-ish, but the actual graphics of when you're in the story mode, I guess they're anime-ish, but it's, you know, I mean, you're controlling it. It's sort of like it's sort of cel-shaded-ish looking characters. I don't know, you know, like 3D cel-shaded. So your girlfriend brings up marriage, you get stressed, you meet this other girl who has the same name as your girlfriend, only with a C instead of a K, and you start a relationship with this girl. This is not a spoiler. This happens like, you know, first five minutes of the game. But you also start having nightmares. And in the nightmares, you're basically thrown into this like alternate nightmare dimension where you're forced to play a puzzle game where it's sort of like you're climbing blocks up a staircase, or you're building staircases out of a wall of blocks to get to the top, to like get to a door to finish that level. And you're naked except for your heart print boxers and a pillow, and you also sprout horns, like sheep horns, while you're in this thing. And there's a, you know, disembodied voice giving you tips on how to play and explaining or not explaining why you're here, and the blocks fall below you, so you have a certain time to get to the top. And essentially the game is being during the day, talking to your buddies in a bar, interacting with NPCs, interacting with this new Catherine, interacting with your old Catherine. You know, I don't know how much of the story I really want to say without giving away, so I'll leave it at that. But I will just say, I wrote, shit gets hella anime. So if you've ever watched anime and dating relationship animes, that happens. The game is symbolic as shit. Like, everything means something else in terms of, like, the fact that when you're in the nightmare world, all the NPCs are sheep. There's a bell tolling constantly. Sometimes there are...
For whom?
Exactly. Sometimes there are boss characters following you up the staircase and doing special attacks, you know, not just climbing, but you also have to avoid their attacks. They take the shape of certain very symbolic things that mean something, like in the game and the real world, not just the nightmare world.
You're kind of selling me on this game.
Every time...
I've never been interested in this game in the slightest, and now I'm sort of like, that actually sounds kind of good. I should maybe try it.
In the real world, there's a curse that's happening that's killing young men who are unfaithful to their women, which has a corollary to your own... I gave away part of the story. Every time you finish a drink, you can choose to have either whiskey, a cocktail, or beer, or something else. And when you finish your drink, the narrator says, like, okay, it's time for the whiskey trivia of the night now that I've noticed you finished your glass. And then he tells you something interesting about whiskey, or he tells you something interesting about cocktails. You have a cell phone that you get text messages on that you can respond to. And depending on, you know, all your actions in the game are kind of measured against a meter, sort of like, you know, a morality scale, or, you know, like whether you're doing something that's more chaotic or something that's more... orderful. I think your performance in the puzzle game probably affects stuff. At the end of every puzzle game, you're asked a would you rather question that usually has a sexual or relationship thing about it. Like, you know, if you think your spouse is cheating, you know, do you confront them, or do you just trust that they're not cheating on you or something, and it's all in your head? And that has a bearing on the endings, because there's multiple endings. There's like 7 or 8 endings in the game. So basically every action you do, you know, has some kind of bearing on the ending. And I don't know, I was engrossed as shit as this was going on. Like, even though maybe it's a super typical anime story, you know, I don't watch anime much, so it was very novel and unique to me, and the gameplay is very unlike any other game I've ever played. So I was engrossed. I mean, usually I don't make it through a 31 part let's play. That's quite an investment, despite mm-hmm. the fact that the actual game would have been a much longer investment time-wise. So I actually...
Would it have been? Is that person had played it before and was good at it or something?
He was playing the puzzle parts on hard, uh-huh. and even though he was dying several times, he still, I'm sure, got through it way faster and more efficient than I would. I probably would have given up on the puzzle game at some point, because it is kind of repetitive, well, it does get hard.
It was on hard. What if you put it on normal?
Right. Or if I put it on easy. You know, if I would have done that, I could have done that. But I don't know. I still think it probably would have taken me longer than him to get through it. So anyway, I highly recommend watching it, playing it, whatever you want to do to experience it. I think it was a perfectly valid way to experience it, because I got totally hooked into the game without playing it. Of course, there's lots of choices I could have made that he didn't make, mm-hmm. and that's why you should play it, because you want to make your own choices. But as a one-off, it was a sweet experience.
Do you have any thoughts on Captain?
I played the demo. I thought it was super cool. I thought the story was great. I thought it was really, really unique. And I really wanted to play it, except I wasn't crazy about the block puzzle shit. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to play the block puzzle shit. I was excited about the game before it came out from its press coverage and stuff. And I was looking forward to it. And then it turned out it was a fucking block puzzle shit game. And I didn't...
Now, I love block puzzle shit.
And I didn't want to play that.
So will I like this game?
I don't know, maybe.
Okay, the block puzzle shit is... It's actually really good. Even though it's repetitive, it's unique.
Well, there's nothing more repetitive than playing Luminous for 4 hours, right, which I will happily do. So
yeah, I don't know.
That might not bother me.
I don't know if you would like this particular puzzle, but it got way deeper in the gameplay than I thought it would as it went on. Like, the initial stages are kind of meh.
If it were everything except the block puzzle shit, if it were just the dialogue sequences, the choosing what drink to drink and the trivia bullshit, mm-hmm. and just like the watching the anime story thing, I totally would have played it because it looked super cool.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you liked it all the way through.
Yeah.
I did have like major spoilers already occur, but I kind of forgot them. So that's awesome.
Also, and I will admit that I did skip through a lot of the puzzle gameplay because you know.
If you're just watching it, there's no particular
I probably should have just skipped that entirely, but I wasn't sure if there would be story elements in it, so.
So I might still play it at some point, but if you did first, you could tell me how bearable the block puzzle stuff is. Yeah.
To mention something quickly about Let's Play, I never knew that that was the term for that, but I have watched a couple different games that way. I've watched a shitload of first-person StarCraft play. That's always fun, watching people stream their StarCraft games, pros, which is actually a very different experience than watching a live commentary match, right? Very, very different and completely illuminating to watch somebody play at a very high level. And I watched all of Amnesia. I watched Day 9, who's a StarCraft commentator, play through Amnesia, which is scary, and it was fun to watch him. He did that as like a Halloween thing last year, played through it and just like scared himself, and it was fun to just sit there and vicariously laugh at him as he's, you know, screaming and crying and curling up in a ball, etc.
I would say one of the best Let's Plays I've ever watched was, I forget the guy's name, but he played I Wanna Be the Guy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god, like that guy literally goes insane halfway through that game. Like he is crying his balls off, like, at a certain part. And I know it's Schadenfreude, but it was hilarious as fuck to watch this guy, like, die a billion times in the same spot and yet keep coming back. I'm like, how do you keep doing it? How have you not slit your wrists
now yet? There's a TV show that is about this. I think it's called, it's that Japanese TV show. It's called, like, Game Master or some, it's like Takeshi's Arcade or something like that.
Oh, yeah, Takeshi's Castle.
Oh. It's not Takeshi's Castle. Oh. That is the wrong name.
No. Well, you're talking about the game that the comedian
it's Game Takeshi Center Game made. Center CX. It's called Game Center CX, and it is a television show about a guy who forces himself to play through and beat all of a bunch of like old school Nintendo and Sega games, and it's just like funny commentary watching him kind of do that process, like devolve into craziness as he tries to fucking beat Leaf Man in Mega Man 3 or whatever it is, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, nice. It's good. But it's all dubbed in Japanese. There are probably like 100 episodes. It's cult classic kind of thing.
Nice.
So on the Let's Play note, have you guys heard of Slender?
I have heard of the game, yes.
And I've heard of Slender Man, which is the meme that game came out of, I think.
So I only heard about this game this week and went to their website, and I would totally love for us to play it together, but I don't think that's ever going to happen. So I'll just say you should go to the site and you should click on the Let's Play videos of other people playing it and watch like the 12 drunk guys play it, because it's a very similar experience to watching that Amnesia Let's Play. It's just this absurdly scary game.
Yeah.
And when you watch other people play it, they just,
they just can't handle it.
A dude literally shits his pants,
right? They shit their balls off, man. They just like, it's so funny and scary, right?
Yeah.
And it's just this indie downloadable. If you want to play a scary game, go download it.
Yeah, not really.
All right, let's see what I do. How about some... Jetpack Joyride just came out on Android, so, you know, I'm 2 months late on the iOS Android thing. That game is sweet.
That game is shit.
Didn't you play it and have fun like 2 months ago?
I played it for 30 seconds and realized that it was shit and deleted it.
For 30 seconds, which means how many replays? How many?
I don't know, like
restarts?
Half a dozen maybe or something. I don't know. As soon as I realized it was that kind of game,
kind of game?
It was like an infinite runner.
You didn't play this?
It's an infinite runner game.
No.
It's like a cannonball or whatever, infinite runner. Except it's the kind where you go from the ceiling to the ground.
Jetpack Joyride?
Correct.
Does this not exist on...
It's only on the Amazon market. It's not on the Google Play market yet. It's one of those ones where you... Like the ninja one where you jump for the ceiling or to the ground as you proceed to the right uncontrollably, indefinitely. And you try to get as far as you can.
Yeah.
But it's just so well made. The graphics are great. The control is really, really interesting. The way that you tap to hover. But then you get like these different vehicles. And there's literally like 10 different vehicles, I think. And they're randomized and stuff. And so you pick up a different vehicle. And they completely change your control scheme.
Oh, it's Half Brick.
Right?
Half Brick have made a bunch of other good games.
Yeah, it's super quality. And then there's all kinds of mechanisms to make it entertaining for a longer period or whatever. Like, there's the slot machine thing when you die, and there's coin collection and purchasing of bullshit. It's not super deep, but it's the type of game that's super fun for 30 seconds at a time here or there. Another Humble Bundle came out.
Really? Oh, Jesus.
Another one of the Android/PC ones.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you can get it and just run them in Steam, or it's like Steam keys or Android downloads or whatever. Okay. It's cool.
What's in it?
The two I played were Spirits, which is kind of like a Lemmings game for Android, except with cool floaty spirit.
Oh, man. I've wanted to play Lemmings lately for some reason.
It's pretty great. I mean, you tell one of your spirits to start blowing at an upward angle, and then the next ones that walk, like, kind of float up in the air, and then they might follow a wind gust that's taking them somewhere, and you try to, like, walk by these plants that then start glowing and grow and try to get them all to the exit. Anyway, fun game. Bit Trip Beat. I already played some on Steam, but now that it got ported to Android, I was super excited because that is like a perfect game for a touchscreen, and it's less so for a mouse, in my opinion. So I was super excited.
That was originally on Wii, right? Wii motion controls.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know the original control scheme.
Not really sure that would be better.
What?
Motion controls.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm really not sure what the best.
It wasn't the point at the screen style. It was like rolling the Wii
to go up and down
in your hand.
Oh, that's brilliant!
Yeah,
because I think the best control scheme for that is the original Pong mechanism, which is a twisting knob.
Yeah,
which no one has on any device anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
You could theoretically get a USB twist knob device, and maybe if you're that hardcore about Bit Trip Beat, you could make that work, but.
I can give you a knob to twist.
I figured a touchscreen would be good enough. But the shit doesn't work on my phone. It's like one of the first Android apps in ages that is just completely broken on my
phone. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Wait, now, have you tried it on someone else's phone?
No.
Because maybe it...
How do you install that stuff when you download, like, the Humble Bundle? Do you sideload it? Humble Bundle
has its own app store thing for Android.
Oh, nice.
So you download... You don't have to. Uh-huh. You can just get the direct download it to the APK from your email or whatever. But if you install the Humble Bundle app on your phone, you, like, log in with your beta Humble Bundle login, and you activate all your Humble Bundles that you've ever purchased through them, just like theme keys or whatever. Mm-hmm. So now when I launch the Humble Bundle app, it shows me the fucking 50 games I've ever bought through Humble Bundle, and it sorts them by which ones are available for this platform, and you just download them and install them through it.
Cool.
It's fucking awesome.
That is sweet.
Yeah. You can do that on the website, too. It's no longer just remember, save your email links. You log into the site, and it shows you all the games you've ever bought with, you know, associated with your account.
Wow. It's like a mini Steam.
It is a new mini Steam or Desura computer.
It's an indie Steam.
So it's like Desura launching, except from a completely different direction.
It's like red light to green light.
All right. What else? Let's see. The Booth at the End just resumed on Hulu. That show is great. You guys got to watch it.
I remember what you tell me about that.
Yeah.
Is that Hulu or Hulu Plus?
It's Hulu.
Does it matter?
Jesus, I don't know. It's Hulu. Oh. It's Hulu original, so they probably the new ones are available. Maybe the old season is available. If the whole first season is available, go watch the whole thing. It's great. But the second season just started, so you should be able to start on the second season if you want. It's a really unique concept about this guy who's in a diner at the booth at the end, and people approach him because they want something. And the whole show is set at that booth in the diner. And it almost seems like an experimental HBO thing or something. And people approach him and they ask for things, and then his identity or ability is mysterious, and he tells them to do things, and eventually some of their stories intertwine. Super badass.
Wow.
Can I mention quickly a TV show along those lines, just like a web-only series?
Yeah.
Jerry Seinfeld has a show called Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
So I heard about that.
Jerry Seinfeld and one of his comedian buddies, and so far they've done Larry David, Ricky Gervais, Brian Regan. Those are the three that I've watched, and the show.
Brian Regan, horn-rimmed glasses guy?
He's stand-up comic.
I had no idea that he... Yeah, no, I saw an ad for him on Claremont Mesa that he's playing at, like, you know, one of the Indian casinos. Mm-hmm. I had no idea he was a stand-up. I only knew him
he's
from
huge.
Heroes.
He's like a huge... What, from Heroes?
From Heroes?
Yeah, he's horn-rimmed glasses
no,
guy.
No, no, no. That is not Brian Regan.
I don't think so.
That is a guy who looks a lot like Brian Regan, but is not the same guy.
Are you,
Brian
are
Regan
you
is
not
only
the same guy?
A stand-up comic.
Oh, shit. I totally thought it was horn-rimmed glasses.
No,
and I'm like,
no,
he does
no,
stand-up?
I don't think so. No.
Are you sure?
This is yes, a stand-up 100%. Guy from Comedy Central.
Oh, man, I really want to do research right
if you
now.
Want to just... I'm 100% sure that it's not the same guy. Brian Regan is a very funny stand-up.
All right.
If you want to see his stand-up, dude. He's got a special on Netflix streaming.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's he's pretty fine. Good. Okay. But anyway, it's Jerry Seinfeld, a comedian friend. It's very Seinfeldian. It's a show about nothing. It's them just shooting the shit. It's them getting in one of Jerry Seinfeld's vast car collections.
It's just to show off his awesome cars, right?
Driving to a diner somewhere, wherever they are, you know, in Los Angeles or New York, you know, and then getting coffee and talking about stuff and driving back. Each one's like 10, 12 minutes long. They're funny. They just crack wise. It's good.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'll just mention it. I'm watching Political Animals, too. It's like a Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, I heard about that. Is that good?
Yeah, I want it to be better.
Want it to be the other one.
Yeah.
That's not on
well,
right now.
Veep I don't think is that good either.
No, not Veep.
I wanted Veep to be better, too.
The other one on Hulu.
West Wing?
The one on Hulu that's not... Hulu.
That was, oh, Battleground.
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 You want it to be Battleground.
Battleground was great, man.
Yeah. Is that coming back?
And hopefully. I don't know. But Veep and Political Animals are both okay, and I want them to be better. Yeah. But I am watching Political Animals.
Why? How could they be better? Like, what are they doing wrong?
I don't know. It's just a little cheesy. Yeah.
Well, Battlegrounds was kind of... It was a little cheesy, but it was also super serious. Like, a lot of
the
time.
The characters are a little extra stereotyped or something, and... Mm. I don't know. It's good.
Okay.
Watch it. Form your own opinion.
What? I thought that's what we were doing right now.
Okay, games, let's see. I don't know if I told you. Did I play Syndicate? Did I tell you yet?
I think you mentioned it.
You played the demo multiplayer over here once.
Okay, well, I got it because it eventually became cheap. And then I played a bunch of the multiplayer like a week or two ago. And
are you not interested in the single player?
Probably not, no.
So you bought it just to play the multiplayer?
Yeah, I was waiting for the price to drop to the point that I thought it would be worth playing the multiplayer for it. Maybe I'll get to the campaign. Probably not ever. The multiplayer I was excited about because it's four-player co-op. There's like a sport class. You can spec and advance your character, you know, and there's multiple tiers of difficulty. It was supposed to get super hard. And it's super fun, man. That game is great. It's like, it feels a little bit like Crysis. Like the shooting and the running and gunning and sliding and ducking into cover and stuff all feels pretty good. And it's kind of unique and fun and futuristic like Deus Ex or whatever, except faster than Deus Ex. And you have like hacking, you hack,
Deus
like dude throws a grenade Deus at you. You hack the grenade in midair so it doesn't explode when it gets to you. You know,
oh,
you,
that's nice.
You heal dudes by hacking them or whatever on your team. And you know, enemies like boss types have like maybe four levels of barrier and they're invulnerable until you hack their first barrier and then they become vulnerable and then you can shoot them and then they have the next barrier and you have to hack them again and then it like kind of goes like that.
How does the hacking mechanism work? Is it just a button?
You like
press
a button
and wait
as when they're within line of sight.
And then
a progress meter.
Bar.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you can like shoot while you're hacking if you're dexterous enough because you hold LB and you right trigger to shoot. But you left trigger to iron sights. So you can literally like iron sights, hack, and headshot dudes all at the same time by holding LB, L trigger, and R trigger, and pressing reload and stuff. It's like, it's pretty awesome. Anyway, played that for about 4 hours and got good enough to like play the hardest difficulty level with good teams and just dominate and get all the way down the progression tier to the bottom row and get some of the best abilities in the game. So not quite fleshed out enough or thorough enough to invest a ton of time, but totally fun for at least a few hours. Highly recommended.
Cool.
But yeah, I wish they would have done a lot more with that.
It's no Mass Effect 3 multiplayer.
It's no Mass Effect 3 multiplayer. Okay. Man, a lot of happened in the news, but we talked about enough of that shit.
Yeah, fuck real life.
So, the last thing, Sleeping Dogs. I didn't know shit
about
this game.
Let them lie.
I didn't know shit about this game like 2 weeks ago, except I'd seen its ads.
It's GTA Hong Kong, right?
But then started, you know, looking at coverage, watching videos, and reading shit, and then I got pretty excited. But I wasn't sure if it was going to be good enough, so I did wait until it came out and I saw reviews. Reviews were good. It didn't seem like shit, so I got stoked and I bought it, and I played all the way through. And that game is fucking awesome. Sleeping Dogs is so good. It's basically GTA. It's not as crazy as like Saints Row or Just Cause. You don't have fucking superpowers like mm-hmm. Crackdown or the Lightning one on PS3 or Prototype. It takes itself relatively seriously. And yet it's more fun and less annoying than GTA. The studio, I think they were a new studio, or at least it was a new IP, mm-hmm. and they've been working on it for a fucking long time, and there's a whole drama about it.
Yeah.
It, you know, got bought by opted or whatever by True Crime. It was going to be called True Crime Hong Kong,
right?
And then it wasn't. They got rid of it, and mm-hmm. then it almost got canceled. Then Squeenix picked it up and said, "Hey, this shit is tight. You know, we'll publish this. We'll help you polish it up and finish it, and you can take it back to your original IP roots." And they didn't change anything along the way when it jumped names like that. Mm-hmm. And so it's just this brand new IP that's super awesome, and they focused on quality of the core gameplay.
What a concept.
I know, what a crazy concept, right? They didn't focus on adding in like too much crazy bullshit.
Purple dildos.
So there isn't much crazy bullshit. All there is really good melee combat. Really good. Like super fun. Like better than Arkham City.
Mm-hmm.
Or Arkham Asylum. I played the Arkham City demo. I like the combat better than Batman. It's like Batman. A lot of people compare it to that, mm-hmm. but I didn't like Batman, and I do like this. I think the combat's way better. It's more brutal, and it's harder, and I think more interesting, and just more engaging.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very similar, theoretically. Then the driving is good. It's like an arcade game, physics driving. But I enjoy it more than like Need for Speed Hot Pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking A. Like, these sandbox, open world, whatever games are where driving games need to go. In my opinion. Like, I love Forza. I love GTA.
Mm-hmm.
But all the other ones, all those arcadey ones that I hate, Need for Speed, Shift, Driver San Francisco.
Yeah.
I don't know. A million of those. All those need
Prison
to...
USA.
They need to be this open world thing. Now, I never played... What was the one that was the open world island?
Yeah, I played the demo of that, and that's pretty
fun.
Oh,
Burnout Paradise?
Burnout Paradise. Well, yeah. I played, like, the demo of that.
Yeah.
And that's probably on its way in that direction, and maybe Forza Horizon I have hopes for.
Yeah.
It's going to be more like that. But I think you never get out of your car and have a person in those.
No, I don't think you do.
Yeah. And they really need to merge. They need to get a good racing company, like, merging with one of these open world games and actually spending a lot of time in the race mode. Because I spend a shit ton of time on race mode in these games, in Saints Row, in GTA, in Sleeping Dogs, and yet they're not that good. But they are crazy entertaining because you're so involved in the world, because the world seems real. Like, the city, Hong Kong, that you're in this game is fucking great. It's like, it looks gorgeous. There's several different environments. It's really fun to traverse. And you spend a huge percentage of your time playing the game just driving around, you know, just getting from mission to mission. And if that getting to mission sucks, then you hate it. But if it's fun, then it's sweet. And
which
is
like games put in fast travel.
If it sucks, they put in
right.
fast
travel. Exactly. A grappling hook plus parachute, which makes getting
sweet.
Everywhere sweet. Amazingly fun.
Yeah, but if the driving is good enough, and in this game it is, but it'd be even more fun if all the races had a point to them, because mm-hmm. you can do some races, but they kind of don't have a point or any progression or anything. Because I unlocked, you know, just playing through the game, I got the fastest cars and did a couple races and won them, and I was like, okay, that's it. But it'd be fun if there were more to it, as far as the race goes. Anyway, that's a whole other point. There's a lot to mention about this game. The story's good. It's not like flawless. It's kind of cheesy or whatever, but it's for a game. It's good. You know, they need.
I love the day when we get that, if we ever get to where we don't use that qualifier.
I'm just being honest.
I know. I just hate that qualifier.
Compared to a movie, it's not, the plot is not as good, but it is high quality compared to even shit a couple years ago.
But see, the game movie thing is, there's a real distinction, because a movie, almost the crappiest movie, is going to have a quote unquote better plot because it's so self-contained.
Yeah.
It's so self-contained. It's just so vastly harder to make.
I know it's harder.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's way harder. Yeah. But the cinematography is great. The movie making in this is very, very good in general.
In terms of like the cutscenes?
Yeah. There's dialogue. You're going through the story mode. It's focused heavily on playing through the campaign in the story mode. You're encountering a bunch of characters. You're infiltrating this crime syndicate called the Triads. You're an undercover cop. It's very like Hong Kong hard-boiled action film.
Right.
Like, you don't go in armed anywhere. You don't carry guns around. You just like improvise weapons from nearby objects. Like, you know, you pick up a purse, or you grab a fucking fish from a, you know, from an aquarium, you bash a dude's head against a chair. Like, you know, you're pretty much just good with your fists. Now, eventually there's some gunplay, but it only makes up less than 30% of the combat. Mm-hmm. And the guns are kind of like power-ups. Like, they're brief, you know, or a knife or something is also brief and like a power-up and doesn't last very long.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like what they were going for with Mirror's Edge.
A little bit.
Yeah.
God, I want a sequel to that so badly.
Yeah, I want a sequel to this right now.
Why don't you just play it again?
There wasn't quite enough of it. That's my only criticism. Because, you know...
But did you do all the extra side shit, though?
Not everything, but I don't really need to, because they didn't really put a lot there that I have a good reason to go do. But it's just enough. It's just enough that it's packed to the gills, like, for like powerful entertainment for 15 hours or so. I spent 20 hours in there doing some optional shit, and it was super fun. Highly recommend it.
Cool. It's so cool to find a game that you really, really love.
Yeah.
It's great.
Especially one that you just heard about like a couple weeks beforehand.
I've never heard of this
game. Yeah, I didn't know anything about this.
I don't know if you guys will like it, because...
Because we're not big GTA fans.
It's GTA.
Yeah.
I mean, but GTA did some things wrong that pushed people away. Mm-hmm. They did this fucking, in the last one at least, they did this annoying thing where you had to keep calling buddies and doing bullshit with them just to keep them happy with you.
Yeah.
And it kind of put so much in, and it tried to make itself such a 60 hour game that it made it so that 40 of those hours were an annoying MMO grind.
Yeah.
You know, they did the thing that I hate about Monster Hunter. In Monster Hunter, they make you fucking pick herbs when all you want to be doing is fighting sweet monsters.
Hunting monsters, for example.
Yeah. Right? Like,
it's not herb grabbing.
Right.
Herb grabber.
Don't want to go party. Pick herbs for monsters. 20 hours in order to fight one monster, right?
So are you basically saying that...
So GTA does that. It makes you like do all this side bullshit that you feel compelled to do because it's there.
Yeah.
Or because they reward you for doing it, or because they really encourage, whatever, for whatever reason. There's so much of that bullshit in typical games of the genre. Maybe it's partially just my playstyle too. I'm avoiding that and going straight for the campaign now, because I know that's going to be the best part. But they don't even get into helicopters and planes. They just like, you know, maybe for the sequel. There's some boats, but it's mostly just melee and driving, and it's good. And I didn't even mention this yet. It has the best soundtrack to any game ever.
Really?
Easily.
Wow. Licensed soundtrack.
It has, you know, it's got the radio station thing in the car, like a bunch of these games do, where you can choose a bunch of different radio stations. And it has, you know, I'm talking about my own opinion. Yeah. It's got a warp radio station, which includes Square Pusher, Hudson Mohawk, Battles, Chick Chick Chick, Jesus, like so many Clark,
music,
Africa High Tech, Autechre, fucking
Aphex Twin.
So no Josh's Twin. Playlist,
yeah,
the radio station,
yeah, my Rusty, two songs by Rusty,
yeah. hopefully, no songs by Lunas,
yeah. Like Josh's music, the playlist is so tight. And there's a Ninja Tune radio station. A bunch of artists I can't name that are super dope, though. It's another record label. Mm-hmm. These are stations that are basically better than Sirius or you know, XM stations. Like, I subscribed to Sirius for a while, and I could not find stations I liked as much as this dozen songs on this fucking game. You know what I mean? And then there's other great stations. There's a rock station with, like...
Did you just hit a guitar, Chaz?
Yeah.
All right.
I did. It's official.
Done.
There's a rock station with fucking Dream Theater and Machine Head. And,
Dream Theater. And, really? And driving around Hong Kong.
There's classical stations that are actually good. There's and there's a bunch of crazy Asian hip-hop bullshit stations that are great.
Did you just call Asian hip-hop bullshit?
No, I'm just saying it's like stuff you're not used to. Yes.
Don't take that out of context.
Out of context. No, I just meant it's stuff that you're not familiar with. I love
variety.
Korean hip hop in the DJ Max games. You know, it's stuff I would never find on my own except through the DJ Max games.
Yeah.
And it's like super catchy. It's like pop from other countries that you're not familiar with is
Better than your own pop.
Yeah. Really interesting because they use a lot of the same.
I get super into MC Solar for a while, who's like French hip hop guy.
And that 8-track playlist you sent us with Japanese swing jazz stuff, that was good.
The Japanese like light jazz.
Yeah.
But Japanese light jazz is actually
Japanese smooth jazz.
Pretty
like, well, even bullshit pop lyrics and it has, like, done drum in Japanese bass. Is better than bullshit American English lyrics, basically, to us.
Japanese light jazz has drum and bass. Anyway, Sleeping Dogs is rad.
Cool.
Pick it up.
Open it and take the disc out and put it into your console and play it.
Do it. All right. Enough. Main topic? Do we have a main topic? Are we going to talk about The Escort Mission plays games we're not familiar with.
That's right.
Yeah.
TEMPGWNFW.
So, Josh, what does that mean? What the hell are you talking about?
Well, you instigated it. You were like, hey, we should play games we never play.
I did.
What about
genres? Specifically genres.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So first genre up is sports simulation games. So man, none of us play sports simulation games pretty much ever.
Yeah, why? Why don't you play them, Josh?
Why don't you play them?
I asked you first. You are the host, though. I think it probably has
a lot. That is kind of an antithetical attitude to having a nice discussion about it.
I think in general, I don't
play... I want your input. I want your fucking input.
I think, but because I don't follow sports in real life, and I feel like they're catered towards real life sports fans.
Oh boy, are they. Yes.
Like, they are not for just gamers who want to play a sports game.
I also don't follow post-apocalyptic survival, and yet I love Fallout 3, so I don't think that's necessarily relevant.
Like, my history with sports games that I've enjoyed...
What do you mean it's not relevant? How can that not be relevant?
Well, no, you're saying... Well, okay, I'm saying that... Okay, I'm disagreeing that that's not why I don't play them. Maybe that's why you don't play them, but...
Well, that's what you asked him. You asked him why... You didn't ask him why you didn't play them.
No, well, I thought you were speaking for all of us in that the Escort Mission doesn't play sports games because we don't follow them.
Whenever I say anything, I say it on behalf of humanity.
Right. And I'm checking your shit.
Before you wreck your shit.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Riggity wreck your shit. You know, I like sports games. I liked...
Tecmo Bowl.
Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball. I liked
best volleyball game ever. That come with novelty sex pillows.
I liked what was that, like,
Sliders? That intro movie for that game is some of the best cinema ever.
Was it like Sliders or something, the one where you throw a frisbee? It was an old arcade game. You throw frisbees across a tennis net,
like Tron.
Tron had a disc throwing
you guys
element.
Never played the top down Frisbee,
no,
Frisbee
no,
volleyball
you're
game?
Thinking of a different game.
I think I know called, what you're talking about.
It's
but...
called Wind Air Jammers.
Windjammers.
Yeah. Windjammers.
Oh, yeah. Windjammers. I fucking loved Windjammers.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the weirdest shit ever. You know, that game is, I recently watched a video on YouTube of some people playing that, and that's actually a real sport. Like, people played that professionally for a while,
really?
But I can't find any video of it. I'm, like, getting obsessed with, you know, I get obsessed with, like, Sepik Takraw and, like, other weird random athletic endeavors. I can't find any video. It's called, like, DC-10, and there was a professional league in Japan for several years in, like, the early 80s or something.
When there was no
I don't know YouTube. How you would execute that in real life. I'm really curious.
It was literally, like, you threw it against the wall, or you had to throw it over the net. It was played with a disc. It's wow. Yeah, crazy. Anyway,
I really liked Rockstar's Table Tennis. Uh-huh. That shit was dope. I mean, everybody likes Wii Bowling to an extent. There are sports games I like, but the big ones by EA, 2K, and such, I think are directly catered to real life big sports fans.
That, well, they're like the Forza of that.
Yeah,
for you guys,
that's true.
They are.
Yeah,
and I like the Need for Speeds of the sports genres, I guess.
Like the more arcadey, less like
less realistic.
The games in which the menu system you can get lost in before you ever actually play the game is probably not our speed. But
that
anyway,
is the thing about these games is that they are very, very complex. I mean, they're extremely complex. But on purpose, complex. Though,
like they're catering to a demographic there.
Absolutely, yeah. And you can play Forza and get way into the weeds with the car tuning and the car building and the not just the like car upgrading, but literally like changing, you know, front toe in and camber and you know, you just said words I've never heard of. And all this stuff. Totally. Yeah. Like, so you can definitely play Forza to that extent. They're very similar in that respect. But yeah, so we played FIFA and
2012. 2013 is out in a month or something.
I liked it a lot. And yeah, I definitely see it as a game where if a bunch of my friends were into it, I could see myself getting really into it. It's a game that requires a lot of finesse, not only requires an understanding of the game of soccer, but also, you know, some really complex systems that we barely scratched the surface of. You know, we were kind of getting to the point where we were relatively competent with kind of passing and moving the ball up the field and attempting to steal. And there's this whole other layer, which is,
and
like,
we kind of learned what offsides, how that worked.
There's this layer of like locking on to another target when you're defending,
jockeying, I think, is
jockeying against that person and attempting to basically block them and create
sports
opportunities.
Fans are cringing right now listening to this.
I'd never heard of jockeying before.
Yeah, I mean,
I've never heard of soccer.
I like
before.
The auto jockey button,
right?
That's a good button.
The A button held that shit down. Not getting away from me, opposing team.
I gotta say, it was really satisfying to score when we played a couple games against each other and you managed to do that. Felt pretty rad.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like soccer is like, it's like the chess, you know, to the lower brow checkers or something. In that it's just the game itself feels more high level in terms of like the amount of effort you need to put in to really get a payoff. Because it's so low scoring, you know, I think the sports in America that are more popular are the higher scoring ones, like basketball, for instance, where someone is scoring like every, you know, 20 seconds or something. Whereas in soccer, you could go the whole fucking game, several hours or something.
Oh yeah, nil-nil ties,
and no one
common.
Scores.
Yeah,
and that it's harder to get into that for me. It's harder to get enthralled by that. I don't know.
Another reason I think the arcadey ones are better than the sim ones. In general, for sports games, are that like it's really hard to translate a 10 or 11, 5 player team into being controlled by one person.
Right.
That's super weird to like completely jump which person you're controlling all the time.
Yeah.
Or for it to auto jump which person you're controlling. It's certainly a leap of unintuitiveness and unusual control, you know, that you have to get past. And so I think all the sports games that I enjoy typically are one-on-one games. The ones I mentioned, and I thought of some more. Hot Shots Golf, I've loved the whole series.
Topspin.
Like tennis games. Mm-hmm. I've played a few of those. Shit like that. When it's one-on-one or one-on-one. Like, well, those are easier to translate directly.
Right, and we realized even the first game we played, there's three of us, and so two of us were on a team, and one person was on the other team, and, you know, the team that had two of us, I felt...
Well, originally we actually played all three of us on one
team. You're right, and that was...
That was way confusing,
that was weird
too.
And hard for our first try, whereas...
Super hard.
When we went to one-on-one, that felt way more, like, sensible or something. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure that many people play co-op soccer against a computer opponent. That's probably not a popular option, but it's there and we took it. So
on the topic, somebody needs to make a fucking good volleyball game. When is somebody
Dude,
gonna
Super
make another
Spike V-Ball for the Nintendo? That was
when
good shit.
Is somebody gonna make a next-gen volleyball game?
Do
like,
you mean
never
like beach volleyball or
either 6-on-6 or 2-on-2.
I thought we were just saying that it was hard to translate.
Well, 2-on-2 would obviously be easier.
Yeah.
And still, nobody does it. Like, yeah. We got this amazing table tennis game,
mm-hmm.
Which is unbelievable how that ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want somebody to do that for volleyball, as unlikely as it seems.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if Misty May Trainer or if the next male duo that's crazy popular, like, just makes the sport popular or something.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe so the female ones that won wouldn't make it popular or haven't.
I don't know. Well, it was pretty popular. I mean, I watched that shit. They were great.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think a lot of people did.
Yeah,
I think they were featured.
Misty was on the Daily Show recently. That was.
I think they were featured on NBC. I didn't watch them on NBC, but
yeah.
So one difference that I can think of between, say, Forza, which obviously is a good touchstone for Josh and I because we've played it a lot, you more than I think, is that Forza is simultaneously able to have that super down in the weeds gearhead, you know, focus, and it also has a fairly arcadey, like essentially an easy mode that's really pretty easy. And I didn't seem to get that same vibe with FIFA. The menus are really obtuse. It's hard to tell what's going on. It does not appear to have any sort of, that we could find, any kind of decent like training or tutorial system. The only tutorial we were able to find
at the beginning.
The only tutorial we were able to find, you could only access by starting a game and then backing out of it, and then the loading screen. During the loading screen, you could like hit a button to get into a weird tutorial system.
Well, that was how we got to the mode where it's like one-on-one, or yeah. You just want to try shooting.
You could choose your number of opponents, and
yeah. But when we originally booted up the game the first time, it did have a brief tutorial on how to jockey and stuff like that.
Uh-huh, that's right. Yeah.
But yeah, it needed that mode to be more fleshed out and accessible from a menu.
Yeah.
And there are so many fucking menus, I can't believe like that wouldn't be one of the options.
Yeah,
all these stupid menu options.
Just as a side option, or a side note, what we're playing these games, we played FIFA because of Gamefly. I'd never used Gamefly before, but I signed up for a free 30-day trial because I knew, even though we wanted to try this game, we definitely didn't want to spend $60 on it because we had no idea whether we'd like it or not. So Gamefly is great, 30-day trial, got to play FIFA for free. I sent it back, and yesterday or 2 days ago, I got NHL 2012, which we played briefly. I played an exhibition, and Josh played it for about half an hour, and Charles and I watched before the podcast, and the menuing system, I think, is even more ridiculously complex, possibly, in
at
NHL.
At least as terrible.
Yeah. but the game itself is a good simulation of hockey, much like FIFA is a good simulation of soccer.
The soundtrack is way more metal.
Way more metal. It obviously comes from a similar code base. Like, all these sports are like, you know, the EA Sport template code base that they then throw in whatever the game is. But I don't know. We only saw NHL briefly, but I'm curious, what did you think about it and how does it compare to?
My initial impression is that the skating is phenomenal. Like, just moving on the ice feels fucking rad. Mm-hmm. And the sound effects and the lines and the ice from the trailer your skates, so you can see exactly where your feet are moving, and the dual analog style of one stick controlling where you're going and the other stick controlling where your stick is, your, you know, hockey
mm-hmm.
stick.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the whole skate thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's like a standard for the last 10 years in hockey games, but it definitely feels like you know, a unique input and awesome, like, finesse input mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, skate was revolutionary for skate games with the right stick flipping up and down. And in NHL, you flick the right stick up and down to shoot, which I assume, you know, takes finesse, although I didn't feel like it did. You just flick it up and down and it shoots in the right spot, like every time, at least on easy mode or whatever I was on. Maybe there are so many fucking settings. unbelievable how deep that menu system is.
Yeah, if you're an option whore or settings whore, this is bad game for
so
you.
So if you're into one of these, I can see how it's a $60 investment.
And it seems like it makes sense why there can be professional leagues. Like, at least Madden, I know, has a professional league, and I bet FIFA has a similar you know, professional level of play in Europe, because there really do seem to be a lot of stuff that you could really go down a rabbit hole learning and becoming very, you know, becoming expert at.
Yeah, so creating a pro, creating your own team, going through the tournaments,
the whole like managerial mode.
You can play as a manager or a player manager in FIFA, maybe in hockey. I don't know. We didn't.
Yeah, but I'd really like. I'd prefer to play like a Gretzky's N64 hockey or with like 3-on-3.
And they do try to make those games. There's like NBA Street, right? Which is like streetball, more arcade version.
I think we need to play those.
Yeah.
So are you basically saying that this is enough of a taste of the hardcore sport world and we're done?
Yeah, like, we know what it is.
There's no point in getting Madden and NBA 2012.
No, that's what the Sims are.
Is that how
you
feel, Charles?
Basically, I mean, I think that these games are going to be the same. Yeah. I'd be interested in trying NHL, but I think it's going to be similar. Like, this is a sport that I'm not that into. This is a really complex game. It seems quite well polished.
Right.
You know, you can tell it had a big budget.
Yeah.
I would probably really like this if I were into that game a lot.
Yeah. We need to play Blitz or Street or fucking NBA Jam is what we need to play.
Right.
Yeah. There you go.
That was games. TEM plays ball. Exciting.
All right.
We're not converts, apparently. There's a reason why we don't play these games.
Well, I don't think that's true.
But I mean, you're like not going to go out and buy that game.
No,
buy
I'm
FIFA
not.
Now,
but
you know?
What I am saying is that I enjoyed playing it for the time that we did. And if the two of you were super into it, or if I grew up in a group of friends who are super into it, I definitely can see myself having got really into that game.
Yeah.
I liked playing it. I thought it was fun. And I thought I felt pretty good at least maneuvering around, and I felt like I was picking up on it and starting to get better. You know, I was enjoying it. I can see it as something I'd get really into.
It's almost like,
especially in college. Like, can you imagine playing that game in college and being really into it and just playing it for hours on end? That like, could definitely have been
with your college roommates, kind of a thing. Yeah,
Counter Strike for me instead of Counter Strike.
Yeah,
right? If my roommate had been super into FIFA.
I agree. It, like, if I lived in a house with a bunch of guys and we had a game system, a sport game, at least a sport game would probably need to be there. Even though it wasn't, though, when I was in college, like, no one was into playing sport games.
So it makes sense why these games are popular.
But why do you think it's not popular with us? Because I see your point, and I'm like, that makes sense, but there was no sport game.
Because we don't have infinite time.
Yeah.
Like,
that's the answer to so many problems.
You know, we spend our budget elsewhere, and there are a million good options. And I think we could all get into Call of Duty and play that, or we could all get into FIFA and play more of that.
Yeah.
Or something else. But we spend our time on other things we slightly prefer. What is the, is it the Louis C.K.? Like, everything in the world is fucking amazing.
Yeah. Everything's amazing and nobody's happy.
And nobody's happy. You know, like if Mass Effect didn't exist, maybe we would play FIFA more or something like that.
Probably not, but I see your point. I think a lot of games would have to disappear for us to prefer FIFA over them. Yeah, it's like it needs a strong team.
The other thing
team
is that,
effort to be into it, and because we don't have a team effort into it, it just kind of falls by the wayside.
Or if you love the sport separately.
Yeah, or if any of us played these sports, like in real life, we might be more interested in playing.
Badminton would be good.
That would be cool.
Badminton. Like a net sport game.
I love all the nets.
Or racquetball.
All the nets sports games that I mentioned are great, and I play those.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or all the driving games.
I played the shit out of Super Dodgeball. I don't know how legitimate that really is as a sport, especially as portrayed in the Nintendo video game, but that's a sport game sort of. I love it. It's really more of a shoot the other team until they die game, but you know.
All right, so next week on the Escort Mission, we'll play something else and talk about it.
Sounds good. Go to our website, buy some stuff through the Amazon link.
TheEscortMission.com.
TheEscortMission.com.
Send us email, much like John Cox did. Thank you for your email, which he sent a mail at TheEscortMission.com.
whom we treated Jorb, very respectfully.
Thank you, Jorb Penis Man Guy. Titty Ass. Urine.
Click through our Amazon affiliate link, click through our iTunes thing if you get an iTunes app or whatever, and or just send us an email. Thanks. Hit us up on Twitter or some shit like that too.
How are we not polished 18 episodes in on this shit? We're making it up every time.
All right. See you next week.
Late.
See ya.